Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Sometime out. We got Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 84. Can't stop this market. Individual stocks. We have a Nike. Well, Micron was down yesterday. Nike's down 15% this morning, which is interesting. It's down to $80. Boy, that's a low for a long time for that stock. Down 13.41. So no good news in the shoe industry this morning. All kinds of other. We'll talk a little bit about the debate, although I don't even want to talk about it, really. God bless. The idea that one of those two guys is going to lead the free world for the next 4 years is so scary. I'm going to have to put my... What does a possum do? Plays possum, rolls over, and closes his eyes or something? So here we have... Kevin, how are you? I'm reading an article here by Greg Iacursi. Asking rents for 1 and 2 bedroom apartments are up 10% in some large U.S. cities since June of 2023. So it's 10% in a year. Some other places are down 5%. Yet, are we ever going to get any of this stuff in the CPI? Is anything ever going to match up, or are we just going to keep lying to ourselves? It was interesting listening to those two gentlemen last night. Does Trump have the most narcissistic view of his performance as president? And the other guy, I don't know where he's at. I mean, it's what a combo.
There's actually, the interesting angle now, because if you watch news this morning, everybody is just totally freaked out, and they're the idea that how are they going to replace Biden? First of all, the Democrats didn't bother to run a candidate against him in the primaries, so there is nobody who has delegates. So if Biden doesn't want to leave, he's not leaving. He controls the delegates. He can be the first ballot winner at the convention, and it doesn't matter what anybody thinks or says. So I'm sure there will be people who try to persuade him to bow out, because he is clearly not okay. What we saw last night from him was after 5 days hold up with 16 people preparing him for this debate. And that's what we got.
I'm surprised how well he did at the State of the Union. Last night was a big downslide.
It was. I didn't think he did that well at the State of the Union either.
Way better than last night.
Well, yeah, low hurdle. So now what's the question? I remember telling you this, saying this on the air a long time ago, that if from the left they decide that they have no more use for Joe Biden and they want to get him out of there, you'll start to see reporting out of the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN about the family's activities in Ukraine, in China, in Uzbekistan, all those places, Russia, and all of the influence that was sold. And you'll start to see that reported out of the outlets that have been ignoring it to date.
Well, one came across.
That's how they'll get them out of there.
One came across as not ready for prime time for that reason. The other one has absolutely no view of what the world was like 4 years ago. In his mind, everything was. He must have said 100 times how he turned the thing over to this guy in perfect shape. It was a disaster when he turned it over. I mean, does that guy look in the mirror and see like Rock Hudson? What is with him?
Well, yeah, it was a disaster, but I will say what I told you back at the time of the election when they first started passing like the secondary relief bills and all that. There was going to be inflation. We had put so much money into the economy at that point that we were going to experience inflation, but in many ways the economy was recovering, as it would when you start to let people out of, you know, that you had locked in their homes for over a year. When you start to let them out and start letting economic activity happen, that there was going to be some measure of recovery. And all they had to do, all that the Biden administration had to do, was nothing. Do nothing, let recovery happen, and take credit for it. And
well, no, they
instead,
had to pull it,
they had instead pull. They had to pass another relief bill. They had to pass the infrastructure bill that had very little to do with infrastructure, and they had to pass the inflation reduction bill. And that, you know, that was their part in all of this. It wasn't going to be great. We were going to have a higher level of inflation than we have experienced in a long time, but it was going to be better than it was post-COVID. Again, low hurdle, hard to imagine it could have been worse. And they just they couldn't leave it alone.
I don't think it was quite that simple. It's the economic view of the where I would always disagree with my mentors at the University of Chicago. The idea of first of all, I don't think the current administration thought it through this way, Kevin. So I'm not saying that they would have done it any differently. But you had the same issue in the Great Depression. People who the money supply dropped by 30 or 35% in 2 years, whatever the hell it was. I used to know this, wrote. And that all the monetarists will say that's what caused the depression to be as bad as it was. And you can't really deny that. Now, the problem is their view of the solution would have been to jam that money back into the system. All right? Well, I think that is a load of hogwash, because Should some money have come back in the system? Yes, but if you just jam the same amount in, the problem is great grandma O'Neill went to the bank to get her $2,000, and the door hit her in the nose and broke her nose, and she didn't get her $2,000. So that's why the money supply dropped the way it did. Money just disappeared out of people's accounts when these banks went under. If you'd have poured money into the system, it would have your gross numbers would have been okay. But Grandma O'Neill would never have gotten her money back. And in fact, it might have been worse for her, because now there's inflation instead of deflation. So the same situation this time. Yes, there would have been activity if some people went back to work, but the governors and these people were such morons, the way they closed specific spots. Half the people didn't have, some percentage of the people did not have a place to go back to work. So if there was any government help coming at people, it should have been very distinctive towards the people who didn't, a little bit, your unemployment went up some, they really didn't have a place to go back to, instead of pouring money at like garbage companies that got all their money the whole way anyway. We had this broad brush of throwing cash at people. Some people didn't get enough because they didn't have a job to go back to. Some people got way more than they ever deserved. So it was a half-assed deal all around from both sides. I agree with you there. But the idea.
Well, and it started with all of the, the loans, the quote loans, and you've talked about those enough. So it started with all of that. That's all Trump administration stuff. As I look at it, they inherited a recovery. Nevertheless, it wasn't going to be robust because we still had to deal with. First of all, the aftermath of the craziness, as you have so aptly described, but also so there was long term damage there, but we also had the aftermath of all of these loan programs that we gave out money for people to keep their businesses allegedly open but not. So much fraud built into the whole mess of it because everything was rushed. None of it was thought out. And we never should have shut down the economy in the first place.
Well, the motivation is, and I think you have to look at the motivation before you criticize the program, and maybe just criticize the motivation. The people who put these programs together, I mean, if you were to sit down with, who's, God bless, I'm thinking of a guy and I can see his face. He's on CNBC forever, and then he, older dude, and then he died 5 years ago, maybe before COVID. And he was one of the guys who was, he was always on CNBC. He was one of the guys in the Resolution Trust. You remember what I'm talking about?
Mm.
But he Yeah, see, that's right. I've got a good memory. And he would talk about, you know, somebody would say, you know, the guy would talk about how, what a great job they did in the Resolution Trust. And once in a while, somebody would say, well, gee, you know, an awful lot of people got a lot of dough that they didn't really deserve. And he's like, well, you had to prime the pump somehow. I mean, their motivation was just to get rid of crap at low prices as fast as they could. And if somebody's brother-in-law was in line and he was the right guy to give it to, all the better. And the motivation, his motivation is so totally different to what yours and mine, as much as you and I disagree, would have been absolutely the same. Wait a minute. We're not going to sell properties at 40 cents on the buck if we can sell them at 60 cents on the buck just because the 40 cents is George Bush Sr.'s buddy. You know, but in those guys' mind, our job is to move these properties. And so what's the song? Just move it in, just move them out, move them out.
Yeah,
I mean, and these guys' motivation was if they could have done helicopter money, they would have. If they just could have driven over to Chicago in a helicopter and dropped $100 bills, it would have made it a lot easier on them. Instead, they had to think up these programs, and they didn't give a crap if the wrong people got the dough, or in their case, the right people got the dough. They didn't really care where it went. I mean, if you actually read, well, you probably have a few people, you actually read the law regarding the, what was it, not the PPP, it was the other one, the Employee Retention Act, ERA or something. What was it, Employee Retention Act? You read that thing and you wrote it and you said, this was written by a restaurant lobbyist. I mean, it was the most bizarre, well, probably the only piece of legislation I've ever read in that detail. And I couldn't believe who wrote it. I mean, I couldn't believe that somebody looking at it, a senator or representative going, what the hell is this? I mean, the idea that, you know, non-essential people got a better deal than essential people. I mean, that kind of stuff was just crazed. But their motivation was, get it out there. By the way, restaurants are big things. Get them the money. Don't let them close, or don't let the big ones close. And make sure law firms are okay. They always charge. They didn't stop. Make sure garbage companies get their stuff. By the way, they're still picking up garbage. I mean, Kevin, they didn't care. They were like seedmen. I did my job. I did it in 4 years like you told me to. If a few people got a few bucks that they shouldn't have gotten, so what? I mean, the attitude is so much different than you and me. It's scary. So when you criticize it like we both do, we're not even in the same mindset, I don't think. Am I wrong?
I understand that. I also understand the failure to have, you know, again, other things that we've discussed. One, we've been so irresponsible with the federal budget anyway that when it comes time to do something like that, you're not in a position to do it. I mean, you do it anyway, right? They did it anyway because that was their motivation. Okay, fine. You did it anyway. If we hadn't been running these awful, you know, god-awful deficits all along, then you'd say, okay, we're gonna be in the negative for a while. We can build a path back to that. So yes, get it done, and then we'll figure out how to make our path back. So that's part one of this. Cumulative irresponsibility makes it worse when you need it. It's just like when you get maxed out on all your credit cards and then the car breaks down.
Yeah. Well, Kevin,
now what are you going to do?
Did you?
That's part one. Part two is there is this process called risk assessment that everybody is supposed to be able doing. Every responsible business person is supposed to be doing it, and every responsible government official is supposed to do it, so that you have something in place in case. Now, could you have predicted global pandemic? Probably not. Yes, there are people who plan for those kinds of things. Could you have predicted it? And let's just say everything anybody said about COVID at the time, you know, that every word that came out of Fauci's mouth and Birx's mouth was true, which it wasn't, of course, but let's just say it all was true and we behaved, everything we did was responsible. There should have been, you know, okay, we've done a risk assessment. What are we going to do in the case of a global pandemic? And that becomes a holistic strategy that it deals with how we're going to deal with unemployed people, how we're going to, you know, what are we going to do with spending, what are we, how are we going to distribute this. You can't make it up on the fly. If you make up stuff in a crisis on the fly, you have a really, really good chance of doing a lot of wrong things.
By the way, they had those.
That's a problem. That's a problem too.
They had those. They had those back before Bush 1 administration. They had essentially endemic manual updated every year by every president, and when they got to it, they didn't use it. They never opened it up.
So, okay, so that's even more stupid. Yeah. But I was going to say, even if you don't have it for global pandemic, you know, do you have, I talk about this in business classes all the time. So you didn't plan for a global pandemic. Understood. Doesn't happen all the time. Do you plan for a really bad flu season where a third of your people are going to be out? For an extended period of time, you're just going to have people off for a really bad, because that does happen. We know that happens. So, you know, is that a start in the right direction? This is the same thing. It's just irresponsible. We deal
with government agencies.
We deal in government with stupid stuff, and don't deal with, you know, the old elder Mayor Daley adage that good government is good politics.
If you've got Federal Reserve or exchanges that are living off the government trough, you don't care if you have 20% of the people home with the flu; they're not there anyway.
Well, now you don't, yeah.
You know, they're not. How do you know?
Well, and if you're 20% bloated, you don't care either.
You don't care anyway.
If you're staffing.
Hey, I got a really rotten thing that I thought about yesterday. Oh God, because I was driving around a little bit, and I'm listening to News Radio 78, which comes up with some good stuff, by the way. So I'll give them the source. Somehow, some way, and I was going to look on their site this morning, but I didn't have a chance to. They've decided that the average family is now essentially blown through. I think they're late with this report. Is essentially blown through whatever kick they got from COVID, you know, the checks and stuff. I think that they're going a while ago. I think, Kevin, if you look at the money that the federal government has buried themselves with in deficit, it's not, quote, as bad up till like maybe now, or, you know, I'm talking a few months one way or the other. Up to maybe now, it's nowhere near as bad as we talk about, because some of the major largesse in the money being thrown out there was thrown to state and local governments that were in deep doo-doo before, and actually some of them have managed to drag themselves into a lot better shape, Illinois being one of them, Chicago being one of them. Of course, now the mayor is running around like a madman trying to throw out the rest of the COVID money instead of saving it when he knows he's going, you know, to trouble beginning now. So some of that, I think if you looked at the balance sheet of the entire U.S. of A., federal, state, and local, is not as bad as the Fed part would lead you to believe. But I'm thinking right now, in summer of 2024, the states are running out of that money, the cities are running out of that money, and I think from the report I heard yesterday, I think they're a little late, the people are running out of that money. And I think going forward, you're going to go right back to not only the federal government having a problem, but individual people having a problem, states having a problem, and municipalities. Not all of them, and some municipalities are doing fine. Some states are actually doing fine. But in general, Kevin, I think the real problem damn near starts today. And the only thing that everybody thinks is keeping us afloat is the market and pouring money into the system, and the market going up and people's wealth bubble going higher and higher and higher. This market drops 40%, which I hope the hell it doesn't do. I think we are in some kind of a mess we can't even talk about, because I think right now the real trouble begins. And tell me I'm wrong, please.
I'd like to tell you that you're wrong. Sorry, can't do that. I think we have some ticking time bombs, to the point where, you know, you go back to the presidential election. Why would you want the job if you know what's coming down the pike? Why would you want any part of that job at this point? Because it's going to look bad for whoever does it.
Well, I think if you were a Renaissance man, a mensch, as the Yiddish people would talk about him. If you're a real person and you could make it less bad, even if other people don't recognize that, you do. And you'd want to do that if you were a real person. I don't know if we have any real people out there, but, right?
Okay.
I mean, there are people who take the job as a general, knowing that if they're in charge, instead of 200,000 people getting killed, 180 do. Still a pretty awful number, but you have to feel you did better than maybe somebody else could have. Right? I mean, it's still...
Yeah, what we really need to do is, we need a plan that's going to take 10 years to execute.
I think the plans, Kevin, whether or not you and I have somewhat of a religious background or not, my uncle, who after my dad died used to take me all over the place, and he became pretty much my second father, he was a fighter pilot, World War II. So, I mean, the guy, his idea of a crisis, was not a bee coming in the car, right? It was a whole different... A crisis is somebody behind you shooting at you, right?
From the song, it's not a crisis, just another tricky day.
Yeah, he would have a very interesting view of the world. He'd see somebody in traffic, like flying by and going through a red light, and he'd say, "If everybody behaved like that, do we have chaos or do we have order? Do you want to live in a society where everybody does that?" And the answer would be no. So it's very simple to just extend out and say, "Okay, if this is the way we behave." And we constantly never pay our bills, and we constantly throw money at guys that throw us in office, and whatever it is, what are we doing to the next year, and the next person that comes along? And if everybody did that everywhere, what a mess would we be in? It's very simple, I think, to understand the logic of the world, whether or not you like the Ten Commandments or you don't. I think it's really pretty simple. Just like, if you're looking at a position in options or stocks, you sit there and look at somebody will give you some long story about, "Well, I got this position and this, I'm short premium here and there." It's okay. Simple question is, the stock's at 80. If it goes to 90, are you screwed or not screwed? "Well, I'm screwed." Okay, well, that's your risk. this is not that difficult. You can have all the, it comes down to the simple logic, doesn't it? I mean, everybody doesn't agree on everything, but by and large, if you extend stuff out, that's why when you talk about even people that run companies and how they get paid. If you pay somebody based on how much he makes this month, he's incented to pour all the crap into the local river, right? Because he's gone by the time you catch him, and the company has to clean it up, which is going to cost 10 times as much as you made in dirtying it in the first place. Now, if the guy had a long-term plan, you wouldn't dirty the river, right? Because you're the ones that has to clean it up. And some of this stuff is pretty logical.
Also, if you had a conscience, too. But that's
sometimes you can't assume that. You certainly can't assume that people overseas. I mean, you lose pretty much knocked that into me. You can't assume Putin or Z have a conscience. I mean, you can't even, I don't know what you treat them like, a rabid dog maybe or something, but you don't treat them like that, but you might think that that's the mentality. I mean, they just want stuff. I mean, what did Royko say about war? They want it, or they got it, we want it, let's take it. That's the logic, right? What more is there?
I don't know. Actually, that's the way some people fight wars. On the other hand, in the U.S., we try to be genteel. We try to win hearts and minds while we're at it, which is stupid.
Well, I mean, we also are in a situation where we have these proxy sort of things where people use people in other countries to do dastardly deeds, but the people in the country are being harmed as well, so you can't just nuke the whole place because you're killing all these innocent people. I mean, that's the different kind of war that we fight today. I mean, it's unfortunate, but in the old days, if A fought B, everybody in A hated B and vice versa. There's no wars like that right now, are there? I mean, I think the rest of the Houthis give a crap about not the Houthis, but the Yemen, the average person in Yemen who doesn't even have enough to eat. You think he cares about stuff on the Red Sea? Are we gonna blast him? What good does that do? I mean, they're different. I'm not saying.
Are you saying war? What is it good for?
Yeah, wasn't that a song? Hey, so how fired up were you about the? We don't have too much time before break, but how fired up were you from the NBA draft? And everybody gets drafted you never even heard of.
Well, I would have been fired up if I paid any attention to it.
Well, I mean, the two Frenchmen and a couple guys in the G League, and like, who are these? Why did I watch the NCAA game after game? None of those guys, a few of them are. Why is everybody so pissed off that the kid from Purdue went in the first round? The guy's 7'4". He's only going to get better.
Well, he may not get better, but he's still...
He's not going to get shorter.
Where did he go? Like ninth in the draft, did I read?
Seventh or ninth, something.
Yeah, so he was down the draft. What do you expect to get in the NBA if you're not, you know, there are guys who get taken in low rounds or get taken low in the first round who are good, but for the most part, the really outstanding players are the ones that you get in the first three or four picks. So, you know, what are you going to, you think you're going to get a great player? So take the big guy. What's the worst he's going to be? He's going to be a defensive force. He's going to be able to clog up space, come off the bench, and he's skilled. You know, he's not a complete dork. So I'm sure he'll be fine.
Well, there's some guys. One of the guys in the Tripoli, my sports maven, or thinks he is, was absolutely convinced that if you can't shoot threes now, the NBA doesn't want you. So you're saying Wilt would be a walk-on? Well, I don't know about that. I mean, the game, you know. I think it's spectacular players.
There's always room for a post player, and what a post player will do especially is force the defense to move away from the three-point shooters.
Yeah, I mean, whatever your guy is, if he's better than the rest of the guys, I mean, I think Embiid would still be a massive force even if he couldn't do threes.
Maybe. I don't even think he's that good a three-point shooter.
No.
He's taken many.
Well, that's another issue. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 83. We don't care about no stinking crummy debate. We're going up here, except for Nike, down 14 bucks. Almost, it's 15% now. Wow. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricardo on the board. We have, trying to find my right page here because I've got so much stuff going on here. Why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and then I'll kick us up another page here. So I don't.
Absolutely, Chief. Good morning. It's currently 6:32 a.m. right here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 67 degrees right now, with a high of 80 degrees Fahrenheit. A thick cloud cover and windy, with a couple of brief showers beginning at midday. That's today and tonight. It's going to be breezy and humid, with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm. Thunderstorms can bring flash flooding and localized damaging wind gusts, with a low of 71 degrees tonight. Over in Phoenix, we got 92 degrees right now, with a high of 110. Very warm with plenty of sunshine, and tonight will be clear and very warm with a low of 87 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we got 15 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, we got 31 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, we got 19 minutes. You're looking at 16 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, and 17 minutes Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. Pretty okay for Chicago traffic, if you ask me, especially on a Friday. I got good news on the MLB, though. Yesterday, the Cubs beat the Giants 5-3, and the White Sox beat the Braves 1-0. Also, the Twins beat the Diamondbacks 13-6. That's not so great news. But today, we got the White Sox playing the Rockies at 6:10 p.m. in Chicago. The Cubs playing the Brewers at 7:10 p.m. in Milwaukee. And the Diamondbacks play the Oakland Athletics at 8:40 in Phoenix. And about the NBA draft, we see that Bronny James is fun news. Bronny James, the son of LeBron James, was taken by the Lakers with 55th pick in the NBA draft. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Gee, they're taken by the team run by his old man?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I think that's surprising.
Well, it's, you know, we still got to make it, though. I hope he does. Why not?
Yeah.
SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 87. Dow Futures up 20, even with Nike down $14. That's a solid almost, well, 7 times 14. It's like 100 hours in the Dow. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 241.6%. Hang Seng up 2. Call that flat, but still, it's not much of a bounce ever. How much they were down yesterday? 17,718. Shanghai with a little bit of a bounce up 21,2967, still kind of reasonably far under 3,000. So not good news on the Chinese markets lately. Over in Europe, DAX up 89.5%, FTSE up 40.5%, CAC around down 32.4% as they had some, the Conservative Party did pretty well in the first round of elections over there. If anybody can understand these French elections, please explain them, for God's sake. There's like three rounds of the darn things. Yesterday, Dow was up 36, S&P up 4, NASDAQ up 53. Again, most of that happening right on the close. I think we continue to have money coming into the system through 401ks and stuff, which leads to mutual fund buying on the close. You know, that happens, and it's happening. 10-year up 2 basis points, 4.31. The bond up 2 basis points, 2.47. Japan down to 1.05, so it's still over 1. Oil, 72 cents, 82.46. Now it's creeping up to the higher end of this range here. Brent up 63 cents, 85.07. Question is, will it break out? Natural gas up 5 cents, 274. RBOB up a penny, 253. I was actually talking to a industry buddy last night. I said the amount of calls being purchased way out of the money in oil, like if everybody's expecting some world war or something, are really high. Some people buying like the, you know, the 110 calls and the 120 calls and stuff. A lot of people do that just as a, in their opinion, an Armageddon defense. How good of a defense it would be, I don't know, but people do it. Don't know why, but they do. Gold up 8.10, 23.44. Silver up 40 cents, 29.65. Copper up 6 cents, 4.40. We've got crypto up 2.30, 61,667. And we got foreign exchange, the euro, we're at 106.9. We're kind of right where we have been. The dollar's been a little stronger. British pound, 126. And the Japanese yen, 160.64. That's been the big news. They actually made it through 161, which is really something. And the, like I said, it's been a pretty strong month for the dollar. What do you have for us, Trevi, Weather Sports? You already did that. Oops.
I already got it,
man. We already got that. We don't want any more stinking sports. Kevin, I was going to ask you, about...
The Cubs and the White Sox both won. You got to do the sports twice just for that.
Well, we should have...
make up for the rest of the week.
If we're going to go to one game this year, we should have gone to the Otani games. I haven't seen the guy play, and I had a chance. There's no reason for me not to have gone out there and at least watch the guy hit a couple times.
Are they coming back to Chicago?
I doubt it.
To play the Cubs?
You know, that's a good question. Maybe. We could go see, well, I'd rather see him at Sox Park because he's going to be there.
Good point.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you make of, you know, I got to ask you, what do you make of this Texas A&M coach thing? Baseball.
Oh, what'd he do?
Well, he was in the College World Series.
Yes.
Said he was never leaving, and the next day said he's just signed with Texas.
Texas always has the deepest pockets when it comes to.
But I mean, and he's got like 11 people now in the portal, 6 starters.
Oh, and they'll all go with him.
It hasn't said where they're going. They're just in the portal.
Well, let me put it this way: many of them will go with him. When you enter your name into the transfer portal, one of the things that you can designate is whether you will accept contacts or not. You know, so you can kind of open it up and say, "Yeah, just contact me, let's talk," or you can say, "I'm in. I've got my transfer in, but do not contact," which generally has a literal translation that says, "I already know where I'm going."
Why does somebody take it upon himself to say they're never leaving on a Monday or Tuesday and then leave on a Wednesday? Why don't they shut their pie hole on the Tuesday?
In case it doesn't work out. They're still negotiating the contract. If it doesn't work out, you don't want, for recruiting purposes, you don't want the world out there thinking that you're going to leave the next time a good job comes along.
Now, would we think...
Even if this one doesn't happen.
Now, would we think he was not under contract at Texas A&M? Did he have to ask them to negotiate? Or he couldn't have been without a contract there, could he?
At Texas A&M? No, he was probably under contract.
So how does that work? I mean, in the pros, if you're a defensive coordinator and you want to do a head coaching job, you ask for permission, and usually if it's a step up, they grant it. Okay, but I mean, I can't believe that him. Our buddy Mike says Texas has the best contract with ESPN, and they just bought a team. He's probably right about that. But I don't see how he can just walk.
Generally, most contracts have the terms for canceling the contract. They always refer to it as what's the buyout, right? But it is really, it's a term. It's called termination for convenience, and it just says if I want to get out of this contract before the end of the term, what do I have to pay? And that tends to be on the buying side or the hiring side or whatever. So I'm sure that's what happened.
Well,
somebody's got to pick up the tab for that.
Well, allegedly, didn't Lou Holtz in his contract at Minnesota or something say that if Notre Dame or Ohio State came calling, he could leave or something along those lines?
Yeah, and those kind of clauses go in can be part of it too. If I can I get out of the contract for nothing under these circumstances, or can I get out of the contract for a much lesser amount under certain circumstances compared to other circumstances where I just have to pay?
This seems like
that's all negotiable. It's every contract I've ever done, I know Carl's listening in. He's he can tell you when he comes on. Same thing. Every contract I've ever done for business has the terms of termination, and I always make sure I get as favorable a deal as I can so that I have the flexibility to get out of a contract if I need to.
I wish I had a... Where the hell's our buddy Bob? For many reasons, friendship and everything else, but... All right, so Mike just texted in that Texas alum, if there's something to be bought out, are probably buying it out. I'm trying to think in my feeble tax brain here. Okay, now... This guy gets a check from Texas alum as a buyout. I have to believe that that's income to him. How exactly does that become deductible to the Texas alum?
It might not. It shouldn't.
Because it's an expense against what exactly? I mean, it's not a charitable contribution.
Well, I suppose you could launder it through the University of Texas so he can make a contribution to the University of Texas, and Texas turns around and buys out the contract. So I suppose they could make that tax deductible for the donor. But if it's just the donor saying, hey, I gotcha, and the donor winds up paying it, that's a gift. And there's, so up to the gift limits, I suppose it could be... although you can't just give a gift to anybody, can you, for tax deductible purposes?
If it's over a certain amount, you got to pay a gift tax.
Yeah, so there would be tax on the receiving side.
But now,
so yeah,
the tax is on the given side and gift tax.
Well, but also, if I give you $1 million,
I'm okay. You don't always got to pay.
No, it's income to.
No, it's not. It's a gift. You got to pay.
All of it.
Whatever the tax is, over the right. what's the limit? 100,000 or something? Lifetime? It's gone up.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's why we need Bob.
That's the stuff for the tax attorneys. But nevertheless, they probably would try to launder that through the university.
You realize that launder is a very bad word, Kevin.
It's what they're doing.
It's a very bad word.
It's the same thing they're doing with the collectives, the name and image and likeness collectives, is they're just laundering salaries.
You continue to use this really awful word. These guys would never be money launderers, or Kevin. They're the fruit of the earth. These guys, they are the America that we love. They are the capitalists that love their football team. That their male organ grows an inch every time the team wins. These are real men. These are manly men. These are Americans. And you're calling them a bunch of money launderers. That's large.
I am.
When are we going to stop?
It could be worse. They could be politicians who are money launderers.
Which takes us back to the Biden family. Yeah. When are we going to stop this crap? I mean, when are we going to say, okay, the Constitution separates church and state. If you and I, or the Catholic Church or somebody wants to put a church up, we're not going to tax it. I get that part. When the church decides to have a munitions factory or a football team, I'm not so sure that's part of the deal. I'm just saying. The idea that Indiana doesn't get to tax Notre Dame football tickets to me is unconscionable, much as I went to Notre Dame. To say that's part of religion is you know, I guess I'm a jockey in a sixth race today. I mean, come on. This is nuts. Why don't I form a church why isn't Microsoft the Church of Microsoft and everything's tax deductible?
Church of what's happening now, Tom? Yeah,
yep. Anyway. But we have the I don't see where does baseball come in the pantheon of college sports? Now, is Texas going to make ESPN paying a lot of money to put Texas baseball on the air?
Well, they created that Texas Sports Network or something like that, and I don't know if that fell by the wayside or not when Texas joined the SEC.
I think it probably had to.
It may or may not be in force anymore. Nevertheless, baseball at some schools is a big deal and gets a lot of attendance, and you know, remember that in that case they have scholarship limits. There's only like 12 scholarships for baseball, so it's not its expense lines are not too. It doesn't take a lot of revenue for baseball to make it pay.
All right, so if you're paying somebody $50,000 a year to play baseball at Texas and the tuition's 20, what's the difference?
Oh, well, you're saying there's a workaround for...
That's a bad word.
Name, image, and likeness. Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. They do that, but that's not on the on the university's income statement, so they don't care.
Kevin, it's early. There might be young people listening. You can't use words like launder, workaround. Just saying.
If there's one thing I know about young people... They ain't listening early,
and they already know how to work around the parents.
And they already know all the workarounds to the system. So we're okay.
Kids seem to find out early how to find workarounds. Dad says no. Where's mom? See what she says. That's assuming you have two parents around.
Yeah. You know what? I had rules for my kids about that one.
Well, I'm sure everybody thinks they do.
If you go shopping for an alternate opinion after getting told no, you're in bigger trouble than if you had just ignored me and done it.
Anyway, I'm curious. And all this stuff, I think, is about. My heart tells me, and my brain really hopes my heart's wrong. My heart tells me that we're about. You know, we've got about as high as we can go. Well, we go certainly higher. We have been. And stock valuations, we've got these municipalities seemingly running out of the largesse money. I don't know what Illinois is going to do here. I mean, Illinois, I think Jay Pritzker, if you look at the numbers, has done a remarkable job putting Illinois somewhat back afloat. Now, how much of that money came from Washington? I'm going to say a good chunk of it, most of it. Now, without that, I don't think he had a chance. I don't care if he's Harry Houdini. Now the city managed to stave off, you know, pension issues for 3-4 years, and this guy can't wait to get rid of that dough and running around giving it to people he thinks support him. I mean, these guys are out of control. I mean, it's the idea. I mean, both last presidencies. I mean, the idea of those two guys talking about which one was better and which one was worse. I mean, good Lord, it's like there's a debate. I can't see how either one of them could have been any worse. Which I suppose, if we have a bunch of big fatsos, we could figure out who's the fattest, right? But didn't they bicker
a little bit about their golf handicaps?
Oh, I did. So one was calling the other guy a crook because he's just been convicted as a felon, and the other guy started talking about the other guy's kids, and I'm going, how low can we go? I don't know if you heard that part.
Well, I did hear that part, and yeah, he did mention his kid, but then he expanded that to say, you know, you're beholden to other countries. I mean, that is the whole scam. It's the contents of Hunter's laptop were damning to Hunter, but they were also damning to Joe, and that was why it got suppressed the way it did. And that's what I mean by, you know, if they really want to get rid of him, if the Democrats really want to get rid of the guy, all they have to do is put the word out to the to their media people is, okay, let's start reporting on all of the family stuff. And once they do, then, you know, he can get forced out.
Well, if you were to take somebody who has no opinion on either one of these people, there's got to be I'm going back to my Star Trek, there's got to be somebody from another planet somewhere that would be impartial, and you drop them in there and you say, okay, I mean, let's look, we got, on one side of the fight, we've got Russia, this guy Putin, who's, you know, about as close to the fifth ring of hell as anybody could on the earth, in my opinion, except maybe the guy in North Korea. Now, you look at Trump's dealing with these guys and how they bailed him out of the one place down by, this is years ago, the one place down by the world, United Nations. They were the only people that moved into the one place. They gave him money a couple times for one of his bailout businesses. This isn't Putin directly, but some of the guys, the oligarchs. And he's had a relationship with those guys and made money off them, and they've saved him a bunch of times. Now, what that means, I mean, one of the themes of the show lately has been, how do you determine how much, you know, what you owe these people when they give you this money? And all of a sudden, now you've got the other side, Biden, who clearly, through his kid, has some sort of a relationship with the people in Ukraine and has profited by money going to Ukraine. Well, neither one of them is Solomon. Neither one of them is clean. I mean, how do you, I don't know if you were the discussion yesterday with Lou was, when you give this kind of money to people, when you give money to a judge for an election, how do you determine how much of it is bribery? We said the Supreme Court case yesterday. What's a gratuity? First of all, for Clarence Thomas to have voted on that, why he could recuse himself, I have no idea, the amount of gifts he's gotten. But now it's a question, is it a quid pro quo? Well, it's really hard. I mean, if you're running for office, and I'll use the term State Farm because it was a case here in Illinois, State Farm gives me $2 million, and all of a sudden I'm in the 26th Street for 20 years, and all it is, you know, carjackings and all the other stuff. State Farm doesn't give a crap. All of a sudden I'm transferred to Chancery, and there's some massive insurance case, and State Farm's on one side of it. Now, did they give me that money because now they bought me for that case? And they give money to 50 people, knowing that out of the 50, one or two a year are going to have a State Farm case. Is that their motivation? I don't know. I don't know what Mr. State Farm, when he writes a check, what he's thinking. What are they buying? What aren't they buying? What has Ukraine bought with Biden? What is the Russian stuff all these years, and the fact that they might owe the guy might owe money? What are they bought with Trump? Kevin, I have no idea, but I'm afraid all of it. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, and we really can't judge until after the fact.
Yeah, well, that's what the Supreme Court's saying.
So, I don't know what policy Putin got favorably from Trump,
if at all.
I know for sure that the oligarch from Moscow who, paid $3 million to the Biden family got left off of the. Frozen account sanctions when Russia invaded Ukraine. So, you know, that would appear to be quid pro quo, and I wonder to what degree Ukrainian policy as it relates to the war, forgetting what you think of Putin for a moment and just saying, you know, conduct of the war in general by Ukraine and the amount of support they're getting from the United States is because he's compromised in that country.
That's right. You don't know. You would like to think, and these people, if you ask them, they're such, you know, Dr. Blade would have a name for it, they'll say, what are you talking about? That never even entered my mind. Yet somebody who's writing the check thinks he's getting something. Now maybe he's wrong in what he thinks he's getting. I mean,
well, and you could try to claim that level of detachment from it, but in reality, then why are you laundering money through, you know, a series of shell companies?
Well, I've had,
why are you doing that kind of stuff? You know damn well it's wrong.
But I have...
Because nobody does that in the real world.
But from the ground up situation, let's say when Clinton was running, when Obama was running, more Obama because I'm more familiar with it, and the Republicans didn't have as much going on here in Chicago, but they had some. But when Obama's running, if Lincoln Park, you know, I don't hang with the Lincoln Parkites, but if I did, and I knew, you know, a bunch of people with the big houses, which I really don't, but if I did, and I have a big house, I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to invite you guys over, and it's, by the way, it's, what do they call them, bundlers. Now, it's going to be $5,000, $10,000, pick a number. We're going to come over, I'm going to have a bunch of cocktails and some good horse d'oeuvres, and you know, you can walk around and people hand you your little bite of whatever, and you're going to get to meet Barack Obama and his wife. And they'll be here for an hour, hour and a half, and he's going to give a little talk, you get some questions, and you get to know him. And I'm going to, because there's going to be 20 people here, you know, it's going to be $1,000 for the catering, and I'm going to give Barack a check for $19,000. And everybody's name's going to be on it, but I'm going to be like the bundler. So if I were going to ask, okay, now what exactly do I get in $19,000, $190,000? What am I going to get for my $10,000? And you're going to say, you get to meet him, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if he's ever in Chicago again, maybe if you have a problem, you can call one of his aides or something like that. Maybe the bundler actually gets to call his number one aide or something like that. Now, if it's $1 million, maybe I get to call Barack. I don't know if it's $1 million and I own a you know, Citadel or someplace, I get to call him. Now, does that buy me a law change? Does that say you got to strike this one out of this law going through the Senate? What about if it's $10 million? Does that buy me a lobbyist in the room when they write the damn bill? I wish I knew the piggy move-up, but I think, Kevin, there is a piggy move-up. There is a number, what you get, and whatever you do, and the people who do that kind of stuff know exactly what it is that you get for what you give.
Well, you get access for what you give. The question is, as you described, is access to whom? Access to the person, access to the aides. It doesn't matter. Who do you get access? Now, does access necessarily translate to corruption? No, not necessarily. So that's where you get a problem. But you also have to look at, you know, in the case of a lot of the Congress people, how rich did they get in office, and
yeah,
why?
Yeah.
You know, and I'll go back to the president, because I know how, you know, how Trump got his money, and so, you know, I'm not concerned about him enriching himself from the White House, in the same way I am about, you know, the guy who now, you know, is just poor Joe from Scranton, never had a lot of money, and now he's got a big mansion at the ocean, and he's got, you know, his the home in Delaware, and he's got the, different places. He's got the, you know, you've got a lifestyle that got bought there. And, you know, is there a money trail to it? There's certainly a money trail that gets pretty damn close to him.
Yeah, but how is it? And I'm not expecting...
And a part of it is that, you know, when you say, how do you launder the money? Well, you can launder the money. You can do things like write him a check and put loan repayment on it, even though there is no documentation of a loan. But you can also do things like have this really expensive lifestyle. And who has to pay all the bills? Well, in his emails from the laptop, Hunter's bitching about having to pay all of his dad's bills. That's a nice, easy way to launder the money. It just goes to Hunter. It never goes into Joe's account. Hunter just pays all Joe's expenses.
Well, this is a question for the agents.
This is the kind of stuff that if he doesn't step down, you can start expecting to see this show up in a lot more media than the places it has been so far.
How is it, this is not a 30-second question, so I'll just lob it out there. Maybe Carl has an opinion. How is it that in old days, not that old, not the 1600s or anything, the campaign laws were allegedly looser, where guys like Rostenkowski could have taken that money personally, and he didn't. He actually had a pack where he helped other people get elected to the Congress, which, of course, he had a string on them. I mean, he didn't do it out of the goodness of his heart. Maybe he did on some people, but by and large, they owed him a favor. I mean, come on, we know that. We're from Chicago. Yep. You know, you ask yourself, why is this guy giving Clarence Thomas all these trips? Someday, somewhere, does he expect influence? I mean, I don't know where the influence comes out of his Supreme Court.
But someday, and that someday, may never come.
That day may never come. But now, Rasty, he didn't have these kinds of, he didn't have the kind of money that these other people have, and yet the laws, allegedly, Kevin, have been tightened up. But he didn't have that dough. I mean,
you know, laws and rules are only a problem for the people who intend to follow them.
Well, that is an issue. Oh, God. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 86. Kevin, thank you. What do you got going this weekend? Anything?
Well, I'm in Indianapolis today, so I'll get home sort of late tonight. I'll probably just hang out at the house.
They don't call it India No Place anymore?
It's a nice little city.
You know, back when Four Cities got so big, Indianapolis was the only river, only city in the U.S. over a million people that was not on a navigable river.
It's also not far from a naval base that is landlocked in Indiana.
Well, I mean, the only naval boot camp is Great Lakes, right?
As far as I know, yeah. But well, yeah, the Crane Navy operation is actually, it's near Bloomington. It's a little closer to Bloomington than here.
Really? Well, it's all right, well, have a nice weekend and drive safe back. We'll be right back. Real quick break, we'll have Mr. Carl Denninger.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello, Norpeg, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al, Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 85. We don't care about no stinking debate. We got wealth management going here, wealth building. Carl, how are you?
Oh, good Lord. You know, last night, I'm glad I have part of a bottle of Signet. You know, really, really good single malt scotch, right? My daughter came over. She's got some stuff she wants to work on with her travel van and things like this. So she was over here last night and going to work from here today instead of from where she usually is over at her boyfriend's. And we sat there as this thing was going on. And of course, I don't pay for cable television because I don't think it's worth anything anymore. But you know, the laptop computer sitting on the, you know, on the table is where we're like, okay, I'm gonna need.
How can a guy like you not having a 75-inch TV that you're watching?
I have a 75-inch TV.
What good is it? There's nothing on it.
Oh no, there's a whole rack, you know, 300 movies and yeah. Well, I mean, it has.
You mean none of this stuff was on over-the-air TV? Wasn't it like Channel 7 or
no? No, it was on Fox News, but that's, you know, not the local affiliates. Okay, so I mean, I have an antenna because there are some, you know, college ball games and stuff that I like to watch. Super Bowl is always on a, you know, over the air channel. So yeah, I mean, there's you know, but in terms of you know, quote unquote cable, I refuse to pay for it. And actually, that happened pretty much right after the 08 debacle, when all the cable companies decided that, oh, by the way, we can find a way to double what you pay for this. Because I used to pay for expanded basic, so I had, you know, the CNBC and MSNBC, you know, all the usual local stuff, plus all the usual, you know, not the movies.
The first level.
Yeah, not the movies, but the other things, right? And And then Cox down in Florida decided that they were going to get absolutely extortionate about it. And I said, no, you can bite me. I'll just, you know, I'll use the internet, but I don't want television enough. It's just not worth the money to me. So, but I'm watching this thing, and if it showed you anything at all, it was that the process that we have and what we end up with is absolutely broken beyond repair. Trump had multiple opportunities to run Biden through with a sword and leave the pieces all over the lectern. Okay, I mean, the green energy thing and the illegal immigration thing were the two most glaring ones where Joe literally stepped in it. And, he's, oh, well, you know, we didn't really have this problem with, you know, these illegals coming in here and killing and raping people. And Trump goes, oh, you know, unlike, you mean not the four that have been proven to be illegal immigrants who came into the country during your presidency. Okay. I mean, just in the last 2 weeks.
Well, if we start picking out four murders in this country and saying they're results of policy, how many murders do we have a week in this country?
Well, you're right about that, Chief, but these were particularly heinous because two of them were young girls, all right, two of the rapes, one in New York and another one in Texas, and the last one was just reported, you know, a day and a half ago, all right? So, I mean, these are, and these are all people who have come into the country, been caught and released by Biden's government. All right. So the idea that, well, we didn't know where they were, who these guys were. Well, that's BS. You caught them coming in illegally and you let them go and you supposedly were monitoring them. Well, obviously you weren't, because. All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're not going to bother enforcing laws, then why bother having them? Right.
Neither side. I mean,
I guess what I'm saying
is that it's one thing to have a, you know, I remember him a little bit when I was young. You know, real young. I mean, the Nixon Kennedy debates were essentially a debate from two people who were going into office and were basically telling you what their policy was going to be
right. Going
forward. Now, to call last night a debate. It was two of the worst presidents we've ever had. They're trying to tell each other who did a better job than the other guy. Because, I mean, they're two. We've never had anything like that in our history.
Well, Chief,
that's no debate.
Who did a least worst job?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It was disgusting. And you know, the CNN tries to go down the green energy path, and the simplest answer to that is, well, you know, combined cycle peaking gas plants are the most thermodynamically efficient means of turning.
Neither one of those guys would have any idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I understand that, but the simple question that Trump could have shot back at him in 5 seconds that everybody understands is, would you like to pay 11 cents a kilowatt hour for your power, or would you like to pay 35? Because you can pay 11 in Tennessee and you can pay 35 in California. Now, which of the two do you want?
Well, the other...
And you know what? There's, I mean, okay, three times as much for the same thing. I mean, this is, and by the way, that goes to inflation as well, right? So the thing is that there were those opportunities, and then Trump anybody that went after anything, I mean, when they started trying to talk about inflation, of course, he dodged that because nobody, but this was the opportunity that Joe had to run him through and leave him all over the lectern, in that, oh, so you threw $6 trillion into the
Carol, they don't have that kind of recall. Trump's view of the world is this incredibly narcissistic view that he was perfect when he was in there without looking at the actual facts. I mean, why doesn't Biden, if he had any of his faculties, he would just say, Mr. Former President, when you were in office, all you did was bleat about how oil was going to be the savior. By the way, when you left, oil production was up 5%. Since I've been in there, it's up 25%. I've done a way better job than you have in the industry you like.
And by the way, for the first time since the 1950s, just this last month, this is out of the EIA, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with it. We actually produced more primary energy than we consumed.
Yeah.
Now that's a real number. And so, I mean, you know, but here's, But, you know, this goes back to, you know, what I've said many times and what you've pointed out as well, which is that Carter got blamed for what Nixon and Ford did.
Okay. Who let it out?
And you know what? When I was younger, when I was a young man, okay, and did not, you know, had not sat down and put the mental chops through it, because I was a whole lot more interested in, you know, chasing cute skirts, right? I mean, that's what young men do.
Yeah.
And drinking beer. But I hadn't...
Maybe together, sometimes at the same time.
Frequently at the same time, yeah. Right. So, you know, I'd not put any kind of mental effort into cause and effect and, you know, study and things like this. Never mind that you actually had to go to a library to do it because you couldn't do it from your fingertips. I made jokes about, you know, hey, I found a peanut, you know, with Carter,
yeah.
Right? And you know what? I mean, if Carter's biggest flaw was that he was too nice.
Yeah, oh yeah. We also,
right? I mean, when you get down to it. So, I mean, here's the thing is, though, is that if you want a guy that can think on his feet, or a gal in the left seat of the plane running America, you can't have that with either of those guys.
No.
All right. And by the way, the idea that we allow a media outlet to do, you know, because there are two other people who are attempting to run for president of the United States. Well, really three if you count the libertarians, which I don't at this point. But yeah, you should. Okay, I mean, you know, it's that they claim to have an actual presidential candidate. Okay, fine. I used to be involved in Florida Party, so you know. But here's the thing, that we allow the media to say these guys have no chance, therefore they can't show up at the debate. They can't offer their ideas. Excuse me. How do you get their ideas in front of the American people if you deliberately exclude them from the conversation? Now I'm not saying that, you know, that I want to see RFK.
Are you as cynical to say that we got one more party than Russia?
Well, I don't know that we actually have two parties anymore. That's the other thing.
I'm not so sure either.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the thing is, I mean, I've gone after this rule of law thing for an awfully long time, okay? How do you vote your way out of these problems? Any of them. I don't care which one it is. I don't care, how big of an issue I mean, look, this is supposed to be an economic show above and beyond everything else, right? Markets.
Yep.
How do you vote yourself out of a 30% structural deficit? 6 to 7% of GDP. It's rising. There was a reason to panic in February of 2020. There was. Okay. I mean, I happen to think the entire thing was overblown, but it doesn't matter. The fact is, we didn't know a whole lot in January and February 2020.
Right? My bitch there is almost the same as yours, slightly different. I do not criticize the panic. I criticize how quickly we didn't, how we could have learned very rapidly and changed the policy, and we didn't.
Well, we had the data. It's one of the things that I pointed out repeatedly. We had the data in April of 2020, for example, from Wuhan, China, that ventilators were absolutely worthless.
Okay, you're way smarter on that side than I'm talking about.
Well, I'm just
simple
I'm just
stuff
saying,
like the governor driving down the street and seeing Carl's Blue Jean shop shuttered and Target open.
Well, yeah, but here's the point, Chief. We blew billions of American taxpayer dollars buying things that were worthless, and
right.
We kept spending the money after. Now look, in February,
well, we also built businesses that were tax paying and put them out of business.
And put them out of business.
Which we never should
have. Oh, absolutely.
But with the favor of other people, which the older I get, the more I realize I'm not so sure that's all just negligence. I think some of it's on purpose.
Oh, I think most of it was on purpose. Okay, particularly when it comes to the countermeasures and providing blanket immunity to healthcare providers that used things that we knew for, because they'd been used somewhere else, that they didn't work, and yet we paid them to use them. Okay, I mean, that is wild. That's beyond negligence. That's intentional misconduct.
Well, let's get back to your original thought. As they were saying, the trading floor, money talks and bullshit walks.
Yeah.
And now, if the amount of money, I mean, Trump, after his conviction, for whatever reason, a bunch of people allegedly flipped him $70 million in that month, and in the same month, Biden gets $50 some million. Okay. The amount of money that's going into these two guys, what people think they're buying or whatever, they must be think they're buying something, and maybe they are. The amount of money that's pouring into both sides of this election is you know, it's something you and I, if it was piled in this room, I'd have to get out of here because there wouldn't be room for me, right?
Right.
I think
you could fill my entire basement with $100 bills.
So, yeah. I mean, so now you put, and I'm just using him because he's the name out there, you put RFK or Mickey DeMope or Carl Denninger or Tom Howe or Ricardo, somebody on that stage that actually sounds like he knows what he's talking about, has his faculties together, and by the way, can give you a detailed view of just about everything, oil production, this, what you actually did, where your inflation rates are, where your money supply is. By the way, I mean, I would be a little weak on foreign stuff because I don't know any foreign people. But I mean, if you actually put somebody up there that made both of these buffoons look like the buffoons that they are, and all of a sudden, everybody votes for the other guy. This money is just pissed away from everybody in this country who thinks they are people that they run the place.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's you know, obviously protecting that from happening.
Without a doubt, without a doubt,
folks. Right. So I mean,
trying to get on a ballot. You ever out of all the things?
Oh, chief, I used to deal with that crap all the time. Because
state by state.
No, but I'm saying the Libertarian Party has tremendous trouble with ballot access.
Yeah.
So we used to deal with that. I mean, we had a congressional candidate in the district where I lived. Nice guy. I voted for him. Okay. I and a handful of other people within the party put a lot of effort into trying to basically, you know, tune him, if you will, so that he had the chops to be able to, you know, to go at it. And frankly, he was quite effective. He went after Miller. And basically drove Miller away from ever showing up a place where Kalin would be again, because he nailed him in the face.
Carl, is a third party candidate ever been on all 50 ballots?
Well, the Libertarians have ballot access, but where
all 50?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it's still all 50. It was at the time.
I think they only did it one time though. Was it last time?
Well, this is part of the problem, right? Is access. But we actually had to go out for Kalin. We had to go out. We had to get petition signatures.
Some states require registration of petitions just to be a write-in?
Yes, and in fact, if you wrote me in for president of the United States, in most states that would not count. No matter how many write-ins I got, even if I had a majority of them, of all the votes, it wouldn't count because I had not designated a slate of electors to the state prior to some deadline.
Really?
Yes. So you in most states of the country, if I could persuade 55%, 60%, something more than 50 plus one, okay, to write me in for president of the United States, they would not count those ballots.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, this is the kind of problem you run into. I mean, these issues are very real, and this was one of the things that we spent an awful lot of political time on when I was, you know, I was involved with the party, because if you can't get on a ballot, or if you can't get the ballot counted, it doesn't make any difference what you do. You know, that's the gateway threshold issue before you could actually start to try to do something politically, is you have to be able to make it on the ballot and have the ballot count. So those were, you know, there was a lot of sweat and, you know, and effort put there. But yeah, this stuff, people talk about the degeneracy and how we're not a serious country anymore, and I make a lot of noise about this all the time. You know, the infrastructure issues and things like this, the corruption. the idea, you know, if you just look at all the stuff that went on, that's still going on over in Ukraine, anybody that thinks that all of the things from Maiden at least to where we are today wasn't driven by money, and I'm not saying that the Bidens personally were the ones that did all of this, although I think they certainly got their 10%.
Well, they find out early.
Well, they got their skim.
They find out early that in Congress, once you're there a long period of time, and you're the one who essentially taught me this, guys, ladies go for 2-3 terms, and they either jump over the river to the take side, or they say this is disgusting, and they come home. I think in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And once you're in there, you sit there and go, I mean, Joe might have been Joe from Scranton, okay? And all of a sudden, he's taking the train home every weekend, and maybe somebody like his son said to him, hey, Pops, all these other guys are on the gravy train. You're still on the train, barely can afford the ticket.
Chief, Joe, it has been publicly reported that the Bidens refinanced that nice little beach house 20 times.
Right, what I'm saying is, at some point, if you're just making them up from someplace, and I think a lot of people, I met a lot of these guys when I was in Washington. They weren't all like Chicago. You meet some guy from rural South Carolina, the guy's asking me for Cub tickets. The guy wasn't rich. We're not all guys, you know, from here. I mean, the first day you put your name in a hat, people are throwing money at you. I mean, it's not like that. But somewhere along the line, when you're there a long period of time and you see the amount of money flying around, you stick your hand out and say, wait a minute. Everybody else is getting it. I deserve something.
Yeah, two prime examples, one here, one not. Both of them having a lot to do with us. The one here is Mitch McConnell.
Oh, yeah.
He gets married to a Taiwan national who, she's an American citizen. His wife's an American citizen now, but originally from Taiwan, okay? Her first break into public policy was under George Bush, supposedly American competitiveness in technology. What has happened since the time that she originally ascended to that office? Well, an awful lot of our high tech and everything else has ended up over in TSMC and China.
Yeah.
All right. Now, this is the woman who's supposed to protect those things for Americans. And incidentally, it just happens to end up in the place that she's from. Just coincidentally. All right. And, oh, by the way, she marries a man who just happens to be a very powerful senator. Oh, gee, what a coincidence.
Yep.
All right. And then you got Zelensky, who literally was a comedian. Literally.
Well, Trump was on TV.
Well, yeah, I mean, but Trump was also a real estate developer and making
his
money.
His dad was, and he somehow.
Well, and he kind of was. His dad bailed him out in the 1980s because he was going to get blown up by the inflation that happened then. But Zelensky literally didn't. I mean, you know, he was lucky he could afford his own toilet, right? I mean, you know, when you're in show business, 99 times out of 100,
but
you're not making a lot of money.
But that's the new world, Carl. If you and I were on TV, we could run for office. On radio, we can't.
Chief, the guy's got 5 mansions now, including one here in the United States, $1 billion.
I get it. I mean,
all right. So, you know, spare me. And, oh, by the way, what was our do you remember what our justification was for getting involved in Maiden and all of the crap that was going on over there? Do you remember what it was?
I mean, I'm sure.
The president was asset stripping the country, and he had a golden toilet in his mansion.
Well, the old guy was even more corrupt than this guy, I think.
I don't know if he was more corrupt, but you know, the last time I checked, $1 billion is $1 billion, right?
Well, these guys. I mean, what do you think when the United Nations actually? An old lady who had a United Nations passport, and she was doing work for the United Nations, and she said, "I can't do this. This is so." When they go to these third world countries, they don't, and the dictator is taking a piece of everything in the place. They give him, if they want to build a hospital, they give him his piece.
Right. All I'm saying is that our entire argument for getting involved in all of that stuff over there was public corruption and diversion of public assets to the leadership. That was the reason we did it.
I remember that.
Okay? And here we are with the guy who literally was a comedian that now all of a sudden has magically $1 billion appears in this guy's on this guy's balance sheet. You know, there is a certain level of it where it's like, oh, so the truth is the entire thing was corrupt, always has been. That's nice. But that guy wouldn't give our people the 10%, and this guy does. And that's why he's in office. And, oh, by the way, that's also why there's a whole bunch of dead bodies piled up all over the place.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, you never really know, like, all the details. But I tell you what, I have so much more respect for the people, I think, from Illinois. I'm going to ask you this question. Were things that much different back then? Was the World War II generation that much? I mean, did Paul Simon, did Adlai Stevenson, did Everett Dirksen, Taraste, these people from Illinois, when they came back and I don't think Paul Simon had anything more than the regular house he went down there with. When he came back, he taught. Where did he teach? At Eastern Illinois or someplace?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Now, did these guys, did they just say no 100 times a day, or was it not the same level back then, or was there some sort of honesty? Was there some limit to how much you could take? I mean, Adlai Stevenson doesn't look like he ever took a dime. I mean, did he just every day say no to people whenever they showed up with a check?
Chief, empires always end up dissolving this way, okay? Great nations always go down the toilet in this sort of fashion. It happened in Rome,
Greece.
Ultimately they were shaving the coins. Okay, that's how bad it got. When America was formed, we had the original Coinage Act, which said that monetary debasement was a death penalty offense. That was literally passed in law. It stands as a law, okay? Hal was pointing out on X the other day that, as I've pointed out many times, Humphrey Hawkins actually defines a zero inflation target as the Fed's mandate, not a suggestion, mandate.
By the way, that was always, when Milton Friedman, those guys talked about it, they always thought that the inflation target was zero, and if it was a little bit to the upside, it was okay, but they would never say it was 2 or 3% was the number. They would never say that.
Well, okay, so here's the basic problem. Every single time that the Fed chair shows up on Capitol Hill or holds a press conference, so how many of these have been held since that point in time, right? I mean, a whole bunch. Every single time, the chair of the Federal Reserve and the monetary and all of the people in the room, when they write their statement and they vote on it, every single one of them sticks up the middle finger to the law. Every time.
If you say it often enough, it becomes the law.
Well, guess what? No, it doesn't. And I understand what you're saying, in that effectively, yes. Okay. However, the facts are that every one of these people, all of them, have rampantly, deliberately violated the law and screwed the American public, 99% of the American public, okay? I mean, for the benefit of a few, all right? And there has been zero enforcement.
Who's going to enforce it? They are the enforcers.
Well, here's the... Congress has the authority to put a stop to that in a day.
Who will guard the guards?
Well, they're not going to... Obviously, it's not going to happen, right?
Right.
It hasn't happened. I mean, but this is the problem that I've pointed out. You cannot... The only... If you had... The law says you cannot rob banks. But if, despite the fact that there was a law, nobody would ever arrest you for robbing a bank, then there would be a line of masked men with guns out the door of your bank.
But some people will get prosecuted, some won't.
Well, so here's the thing. But if that was the case, and it was why it became widely known that that was the case, the only way you would stop it is to give every teller a gun, and as soon as the robber comes in the door, you shoot him. And then you drag his dead body out onto the sidewalk and let it rot so that the next guy that's thinking about it has a pretty good idea what might happen. Okay.
Well, yeah, but it's...
And here's the thing. If your bank started doing it, your bank wouldn't get robbed anymore, but the one down the street that didn't do that would, right? Because, hey, I can go... If I come in here and try it, I'm going to get shot, but if I go over there, I can get the loot. So here's the bottom
line. The very simple thing, Carl, as you're saying, is his brother Copper said in freshman year at Marist High School, rules imply enforcement. If you're not going to force them, you don't want to have the rule.
Well, that's right. And the thing is this: if you want to stop corruption and you want to stop, because corruption is just a branch of criminality, right? The risk of getting caught and the cost of getting caught, whatever it is, has to be greater than the perceived benefit.
You could have taught a class at the University of Chicago. That's exactly what the guy
said. And, oh, by the way, there are people who are psychotic enough that even if that balance is negative, and clearly so to anybody with a brain in their head, they're going to do it anyway.
Well, it only counts for people, and I had this guy, we taught this for like 3 weeks, it was a class that taught all kinds of weird stuff, and it's, if you take the rapes and murders out, I don't know if it's even true today, his thought was 85% of crime is, to a certain extent, rational in terms of cost versus benefit. And the simplest thing was, if you steal a case of beer from a 7-Eleven and you got a 10% chance of getting caught, the penalty should be 10 cases of beer.
Correct. At least 10. Actually, it should be 11. Should be
able, he said, but at least make it where you sit there and go, hey, should we steal a case of beer? Somebody goes, it's not worth it.
I mean, well, it should be 11 cases.
Well, yeah, to make it a penalty, but at least make it neutral.
I'm saying the penalty has to be worse than the squeeze.
Well, you and I know, but I'm saying it's not even close to being equal. I mean, right now, if a bank does some crap and years later they get a fine, the fine is probably a tenth of what they made on the thing. And it's you go, girl. It's not. It is nothing to do.
By the way, did you see the Supreme Court decision that impacts your industry directly?
Yes. It's very interesting.
I read that opinion. Are there people screaming?
I was going to ask you after the break. I was going to ask you about that one as you're reading my mind. But I also was going to ask you the one about the corruption the day before.
Yeah, well, the one about corruption is that one was kind of a head scratcher. But the SEC one I thought was very interesting. And that, yeah, let's talk about it after the break.
We could talk about these two for like a couple of weeks. Boy, I can't. The second one, I tell you what, I've been involved, Carl was expert witness and stuff, and many arbitrations. I thought they were all rigged, every single one of them. The idea that you don't have a resolution in court or something, I think absolutely sucks. And you know what? As much as I'm not into the conservative group on the court, I think they got. And if it throws all these administrative law judges from, I got a great story. Wait a minute. After break, wait to hear a story about. It has to do with a toilet. So hold that thought. S&P futures up 17. Right. Nasdaq futures up 82.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. The number we've all been waiting for all week, the PCE inflation number that the Fed looks at, but nobody has any idea the detail behind it. It's a total waste of time number. Is out and it shows 2.6% year over year. If you believe that, boy, I'd love to sell you something. I think the monthly was, I think, unchanged. So, again, it's a number that they look at, but they won't tell you where they got it, and you can't see how they came up with it. That's not even Carl could find out where the hell this number comes from. Just saying. Anyway, S&P futures up 20, NASDAQ futures up 103. We like the number, even though we don't know what it is. We're in Asia. Nikkei up 241.6%. Hang Seng up 2. Call that flat, but. 218,000, 17,718. Shanghai up 21. Trying to get back to 3,000, 29,67. I'm also going to ask Carl about what he thinks about this Japanese yen. Japanese yen, I'll say where it is when we talk about the FX. The U.S., the Japanese yen made it to 161, which will be like an all-time high against the dollar. Low, I'm saying. The euro is 107. Which is, again, lower on the week. We was at 108 for forever. And the British pound is 126.5. It was 128 forever. So dollars had the biggest monthly rise here in quite a while. Markets over in Europe, they are up, but not as much as they were. Matter of fact, they're not near as much as they were earlier. DAX only up 50, 0.3%. FTSE up 20.5. And CAC Rand's actually down 49. They were down earlier. That's because the conservatives have won the first round of the parliamentary elections. Then there's a second round. So it's they vote for people that can be on the second ballot, and then they vote again on the second ballot. It's sort of like primary. It's sort of like running for the mayor election here, which is kind of weird. Yesterday, Dow was up 36, S&P up 5, NASDAQ up 53. So we're positive, but muted. All happened right on the close. Mutual fund buying appears to be around. Bonds, now they're down 1 basis point. They were up earlier, 4.27. The Bund unchanged, 2.45. Japan, down to 3 basis point, 1.05. We'll see if Japan's going to raise their interest rate. It seems like they might have to with what's happening in the yen. Oil up 42 cents, 82.16. Brent up 37 cents, 86.77. Natural gas up 4 cents, 272. Gold, which was up earlier, still up 790, 23.44, right in this 23.10 to 23.60 range. Can't seem to break out. Silver up 40 cents, however, 29.65, trying to get back to 30. Whenever it gets to 30, was right back down. Copper up 6 cents, 439. And last we got Bitcoin up 72 bucks, 61,509. What do you got for us, Ricardo? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chip. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. It's 68 degrees right now with a high of 80. A thick cloud cover and windy with a couple of brief showers beginning at midday today. Tonight will be breezy and humid with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm. These thunderstorms can bring flash flooding and localized damaging wind gusts. The low today is 71 degrees. Over to Phoenix, we got 90 degrees right now with a high of 110. Very warm with plenty of sunshine, and tonight will be clear and very warm with a low of 87 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we're looking at 21 minutes. 35 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. 24 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 22 minutes. On to sports in the MLB, the Twins beat the Diamondbacks 13-6, but we got two victories for Chicago, actually. The Cubs beat the Giants 5-3, and the White Sox beat the Braves 1-0. And today we got a couple more games, too. White Sox play the Rockies at 6:10 p.m. in Chicago. The Cubs play the Brewers at 7:10 p.m. in Milwaukee, and the Diamondbacks play the Oakland Athletics at 8:40 p.m. in Phoenix. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Yeah. Big news here, Carl. I'm just going to shock you. You'll be shocked. Justine Fisher has an article. The cost of prescription medications in the U.S. has increased 37% since 2014. I'm going to take the over on that.
Yeah, I'll take the over on that, too. This was one of the things that set me off originally on the whole healthcare thing was when I was running MCS. I had a very nice lady who worked for me. And we, like most mid-size and larger companies, you know, as you, once you get past the couple of dudes in a, you know, in a shack spot, right, you try to find a way to do health insurance as part of your benefit package. We had it. She comes into my office freaking out because she had just gone down to the corner Walgreens. By the way, they're getting pounded in the you-know-where.
Yeah.
They're getting in a keister. Good for them. Okay. After some of the stuff that I've seen them pull over the years, I'm glad that I will shake their hand as they go through the bankruptcy court's front door. Anyway, what had happened was that she'd gone to refill a prescription that she'd been using for quite some period of time. And all of a sudden, the pharmacy turns around and says, oh, by the way, they took it off the formulary list. That'll be $400.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, this was something that she actually needed, right? And, you know, and she was freaking out. And I said, well, look, you know, you're going to have to give me a release because under the law, I cannot have any of your health information. Okay. I can't. But if you're willing to do that, I will go after these people at the health insurance company and rip them a new one, seeing as I'm the guy that writes a check every month. And so she did, and I did, and we had a as they say, a conversation, you know, Guido style. And then after at the end of that conversation, I went and I told her, I said, go back over there to the pharmacy. Your prescription's waiting for you. But by the way, you're going to have to go see your doctor because, you know, next month, this isn't going to work. Okay. And so you're going to, you know, they're going to have to figure out something else that works and, you know, is on the formula. So this was one of the things, and this happened a couple of times, but this was the sort of thing that it, you know, got me looking in detail into exactly what was going on, because what I rapidly discovered is that this very same drug, anywhere except in the United States, was a tenth of the price.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, that's another thing. This article says where we average 2 to 3 times more than anywhere else.
Yeah, well, and in some cases, it's obscenely more.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, in this particular case, this was a drug that she could have gotten on a plane and, you know, and gone over to France or Spain, or, you know, and this was before as much of the consolidation occurred over in Europe. Of course, this was in the 1990s, and she could have had this, you know, instead of $400, it would have been $40, okay, you know, converted, of course, to the local currency. But this, with this sort of thing, and as I have repeatedly pointed out, this is all illegal under 15 United States Code Chapter 1 and has been for 100 years. It's a felony. It's not a fine.
It's not a felony if it's never enforced.
Well, it's 10 years in the can for everybody involved in it, okay? So that's what the law says. Same thing, same sort of law, by the way, that says that the guy who rented an Airbnb to this illegal immigrant from Ecuador down in Texas who just grabbed a young thing. Actually, that one might have... No, that one was in Syracuse. Grabbed the young woman, killed her, has been caught. The evidence includes video from the Airbnb with him having slung her over the shoulder, take her out to bury her in a shallow grave. The Airbnb owner is subject to life in prison under 8 U.S.C. 1324. So these laws are here, okay? But they aren't enforced.
Okay.
And if you want to know why you get it in the keister, Chief, on all these different issues, it's because they're not enforced.
Well, I am livid against, and this Supreme Court thing actually, I don't know where it's going to land, but has some positive things.
I very much like the decision in regards to the SEC.
Right. What I'm saying is, on our end, I at PTI Securities, I'm a little tired of me being the drafted police force for this country.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't sign up for that. If somebody comes in and opens up an account, now I don't mind doing regular stuff. But why it's up to me to check the what's the list of wanted people in Europe and all the other crap?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, why is it that we don't... Why do we...
Why is it that you are the one who is supposed to be doing that when they have every opportunity to do it before the guy ever gets to you?
Right. I mean, it's a, and it's, you know, it's crazy. It's like, you know, the I was a bank in Washington that I was never fond of, but they got pinched. How's that for a sell side term for being arrested for people doing money laundering? Now,
right.
If somebody, if you have a bank, I don't know what the numbers are now, but if somebody brings in 10 or 11 grand in cash, you got to fill out a form. There's stuff you have to do. And
well, it's 10 grand, but then any kind of structuring.
Right, but I mean, you have stuff that you have to do. Point right. is that the bank did everything they were supposed to do, and it was never prosecuted on the wherever the forms the. But the bank was accused of allowing money laundering because they had somebody who they filled out a bunch of these forms for. Well, that the forms go someplace.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy where they went, he didn't do crap, and so then they pinned it back on the bank. Like somehow they should have stopped the guy from doing banking there. Well, I'm not sure that's in the rules. Anyway, but this one came out as a Securities Exchange Commission. They essentially put a shiver up the behind of the incredible use of administrative law judges that essentially are industry judges.
What they essentially said is that economic damages, you can recompense somebody who gets screwed, but at the point that that what you do amounts to a fine, okay, in other words, it's not compensation for the person who got screwed, it's a fine, because it doesn't go back to the person who got hosed, it goes to the government.
Right.
Okay, if you do that, it implicates the trial by jury, right? And, oh, by the way, you can't do that administratively.
But they've been doing it for years.
Yeah, well, not anymore.
Okay, but, I mean, they actually have a case years in, what's it, somebody versus somebody, where in 1988 where they said it was okay.
Right.
So right. You want to run a real quick my toilet story?
Yeah.
Get a load of this. Ricardo, you'll love this. We had an issue with the toilet, right? So we put a new toilet in. Now, what are you supposed to do with the old toilet? I have no idea. Except we put it in the garbage, right? I mean, I don't know where else you're going to go with it. I mean, you're not going to get a dumpster for a toilet. So it's in the garbage. Well, the garbage can has the lady next door. I mean, somebody always steals our garbage can, right? So people use it. It's in the garbage can of the lady next door. So evidently there's a sanitary Metropolitan Sanitary District, like police department. they look in the garbage can and they take a picture of the toilet. And because there's the lady next door's address is on it, they send her this letter fining her like $150.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she, of course, she's this single lady that she's very nice, but she can go from like 0 to 100 in about a second.
Uh-huh.
I get this incredible phone call. What is, you know, how come I'm getting this fine, blah, 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 blah.
Blankety
blah.
Blank, blank, yeah, blank, yeah. Right.
Well, actually, the toilet was in a garbage can with our address on it, but she got the letter.
Yeah.
Which is even worse. So she goes, you got to fix this, blah, 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 blah. So the owner of the place, I said, all right, I'm going to write this letter. So I write the letter saying that the garbage can that the toilet was in was not her garbage can.
Right.
But I was very quick to point out, that would be our address. As to how the toilet got in there, I have no idea. something along those lines. And as for the source of the toilet, you know, I refuse to comment or something along those lines. So she ends up going. The Streets and Sand has a court. They have their own court.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sitting there going, "You could have knocked me over with a feather at the street."
You got to be kidding me!
You got to be kidding me! So she shows up, and they've got their own like prosecuting attorney, and he's giving her no end of grief. You know, there's a letter there saying that this is not my garbage can. We're 1951, and she's 1955 or something.
Right.
So she hands the judge the letter, and the judge says, "Okay, if that's not your garbage can," and the guy goes, "Well, wait a minute. There's still a toilet in there. It's somebody's toilet. We got to fine her something," is what the guy says in court. We got to fine her something. This toilet. this could be a show on the Honeymooners, for God's sake.
You know, this is the kind of, but this, the, yeah, this kind of insanity is not new, okay? It's just that it's the grift and the, we have to do something to justify our salary thing.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, it's gotten so far out of control. And, you know, but again, I do like I said, yeah, I read that decision as soon as it came out because the social media sphere blew up.
Oh, yeah.
On that one. Right, it was, oh my God, this is the end of the world, end of democracy. And so I'm like, well, you know, maybe I ought to go read this one right now instead of, you know, when I get around to it over the weekend with a couple of good beers to, you know, wash down whatever kind of pablums coming out of the Supremes. And so I read the opinion. I'm like, okay, so basically the bottom line is that the distinction is that you can use administrative law to compensate people who get screwed. That makes some sense, right?
Administrative law no matter what, in my opinion.
Well, yes, but the boundary where you implicate the... Because, I mean, that's what the Supremes supposedly are all about, right? Is where's the boundary of the... Where's the bright line on the Constitution? Where's the edge of the paper? And what they held was that you could do that. You can compensate people who get hosed. But the minute that you step into the space of a what would be considered a common law tort, and in under reasonable historical context, where the point of the judgment is not just to compensate you for the wrong or the bad thing that happened to you to make you whole, but it is to punish. There is an element of punishment associated with it. As soon as that line gets crossed, you have a right to a jury. Because the jury has the right to determine whether or not you should not have to compensate somebody who got screwed, but whether or not you should be punished. Okay? And those are two very different things. Compensation, punishment are not the same. And that was the distinction that they drew.
Which makes perfect sense, I think.
I think it does, too. When I read that, and I said, this is not crazy. This is one of the... I mean, I've had an awful lot of really nasty things to say about the Supremes in the last few years. And, you know, especially the stuff that comes out of Ketanji Jackson's mouth. Oh, my God. But you know what? I also listen to their oral arguments in the you know...
We don't have Trump to worry about what comes out of Thomas's mouth. Nothing.
Well, yeah. Although, actually, he's asked questions in the last few years.
That's because Scalia's dead. You can't let him do all the work.
Well, that's true. When he first got on the court, he basically sat there and he looked like a potato. Okay, I mean, there was nothing came out of the guy's head.
It even made it to Boston Legal. I bet you $50,000 I could make him say something. Remember that?
Yep. But it was that was interesting. But I actually heard a cogent set
right, but
of arguments.
Now, okay, whoa, let me interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
Sorry to do that, but it's... You're looking at, as you normally do, you're looking at the bones of the opinion, which I think most people would agree with. But the hue and cry you're hearing is, in a lot of places now, employers require you to sign a document saying that you will only arbitrate, you won't sue. All that stuff now is most people think is now called into conflict because of this Supreme Court stuff, this ruling. Now, whether it is or it isn't, you probably have a better opinion than me. And it even comes down to, in my industry, the idea that you have to be an arbitration. You have to be an arbitration. Well, arbitration started on the exchange floor. And if you and I had a problem with a outtrade, we really didn't want to go to court with it. We decided we'd arbitrate it, and you'd walk in and you tell your side of the story, and I tell mine, and basically, a lot of times the arbitrator would say, "Why don't you two idiots split it and get out of here?" It was supposed to be an alternative, simple way to adjudicate stuff. Well,
right.
Arbitration has grown into, you can spend... I've been expert witness, has been involved in a couple of these things. You can spend 3-4 weeks now in an arbitration where people are milking the hell out of people, money wise, lawyers. And by the way, the arbitrators get paid by the day. No judge would ever put up with that. Ever
put. Right. Well, yeah, and it's the problem is with most things that started out as a perfectly reasonable approach to things, it's gotten abused. And I don't know. I think to the extent that this draws the bright line at the point where the process becomes abusive in punishment, okay? And that, I think, is what's triggering people to think that that's where it's, you know, where it lands, right?
Well, the arbitration process, for you to arbitrate anything real in my industry now, if somebody comes after you in an arbitration, most firms would say the minimum cost to arbitrate is 100 and a quarter, maybe 150.
Well, see, that's where that line gets crossed.
So
the first
phone call is, we can make this go away. You know it's going to cost you 150. My clients will settle for 100 like today.
Right.
And the big firms pay it, which does nothing but encourage these losers to keep doing it.
But see, I think to the extent that this puts a cork in that, I think it's good.
I bet it won't.
Well, I don't know if it will or won't, but the clear intent in the decision is to do that. Now, will people try to find a way to get around that problem?
Nobody pays attention to anything else the Supreme Court said lately. Why would they pay attention?
Chief, the Supreme Court told Biden he couldn't write off other people's college debt on the American taxpayer. He turned around and 3 weeks later did it again. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I guess my question is, where does the problem land? Now, why doesn't the Congress, which put the law up, why don't the Speaker of the House and the guy who's in charge of the Senate, whatever the hell he is, a majority leader, why don't they come out together tomorrow on TV and go, guys, quit fighting about the student loan stuff. In 6 months, we're going to have a bill together and we're going to rebate interest to people. We're going to fix this through Congress because we're the ones that screwed up in the first place. This is the place that ought to be fixed. We'll take care of it because that's what ought to be taken care of, correct?
Well, this is the place where it has to be fixed.
Well, right.
Right. It has nothing to do with what you'd like. It has to do with the fact that So, you know, one of the things is, as we've just been talking about for, you know, basically the entire show, that you can have all the laws you want, but if nobody enforces them, they may as well not be there. Okay. Well, and people say, well, okay, the executive has to enforce the law, which, by the way, is the truth. And when it comes to criminal law, we delegate the monopoly on force in that regard to the government. You can't.
We used to. Now people have their own police force in their neighborhoods here because the other guys don't do anything.
Well, they're going to have to. Yeah. Well, okay. And by the way, that's not a direction you really want to go.
Oh, without a doubt. Right?
That ends in some very, very bad places. And that is, you know, and my argument is that the alternative to this is to socially destroy, ostracize, blackball not only the people who are refusing to do their jobs, but their entire families and genetic lines, and make it personally painful enough that they will do their job without having to use violence, which is legal, okay? And there's absolutely nothing they can do to you if you do that. But, you know, people don't, I'm not going to throw my kid out of, you know, of my will and out of my life because he works for a pharmaceutical company and screws everybody in the country out of, you know, $50 billion last year. Then this continues to deteriorate until there's some kind of really nasty civil conflict.
But we're well on our way.
Oh, well, yeah, hello. What has been going on for the last 10 years?
Hey, let's...
Chief, one point though I want to make.
All right, can we talk at least about the other Supreme Court? We only got 4 minutes. The one about corruption.
Let me just add one quick point. Congress could stop this, but because they have the power of the purse, they could turn around and say, we're pulling all the money from your department until this ends.
Sure they could.
Okay? And that would stop it with finality. So people who say that there is no way to address this, you're wrong. There is. And, oh, by the way, we keep sending those same people back to Congress. So I am kind of tired. You know, the only difference between sex and rape is consent.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. So, which is it, guys? Are you being raped or are you being sexed?
By the way,
you're laughing. Yeah.
Well, you. Well, let's save the other one till Tuesday. That's a big one, the corruption part, because we got a couple of those trials.
The corruption one is a big one, and I don't think we can do it in 2 or 3 minutes.
No. By the way, you missed. You picked up. What's her name? What's his wife's name? She was in a. Wasn't she a cabinet member too?
You're talking about McConnell's.
Yeah.
Wife.
Chow. Alina Chow. Yeah. She was. Well, you missed one. I think it was worse. Was Wendi Graham.
Yeah. Oh no! Well, I was just picking on the example from the Senate Majority Leader.
Well, she was on the Enron board.
Yes,
and she was, able to convince her husband to not have Enron being regulated with what they were trading back and forth across state lines. And she was on the board, wasn't she? Who's the person that supposedly holds the paddle for people to get out of line? What's that board member? It's the governance. Wasn't she the governance chair?
Yeah, it's not one. The thing is, you know, I mean, I got some comments about, oh, well, you know, how about, you know, the thing about going to McConnell. Well, how about this guy? I'm like, I was illustrating a point.
Oh, no, I
know.
Not,
same, I was but, not well, making an exhaustive
well,
list.
No, I guess what I'm trying to do here, and all the, God, the women are going to come after me with a fork here. Somehow in the Constitution, we looked at people. Okay, how can I say this without being a total idiot? You looked at a guy, and mostly it was guys. I mean, women didn't get a chance to do anything, which was screwed up, obviously. But you looked at a person who they essentially controlled the family unit, for lack of a better term. And now you have people that are in Congress that appear to not be doing much on their own, but have a spouse that is raking in the cash all over the damn place. And yet you can't say your wife can't be on a board.
Oh, you look at Pelosi.
What I'm saying, or Pelosi, look at the amount of money whatever her husband made in the tuna business, whatever the hell he's in.
Right.
You know, so you can't say because you're a congressman, your wife can't have a job. That's not going to fly in today's world. But the job shouldn't be taking advantage of you being in Congress. I don't know how you write that law.
I don't either, but you know what? We've got a problem there, don't we?
Well, it's like pornography. I can't define it, but you show it to me.
But
I'll
I know
what
I see it.
I know
right.
when I see it. I mean, I don't think. Didn't Pelosi's husband, when there was a minimum wage increase, the only territory that it didn't go up in was where he had the tuna factory or something?
Oh yeah, I mean
stuff like that. Should Wendi Graham have to sit home knitting and cooking dinner? I don't think so.
Well,
would she have gotten that job if she wasn't the guy's wife? I don't think so either.
Well, Newsom famously exempted Panera Bread from his, thing on minimum wage too.
Yeah, well, so I'm saying it's a crazy world. But I mean, when you start, one thing about when I started kind of the show, and I'm going to ask Kevin instead of you, what is different? I mean, Paul Simon, Everett Dirksen, Republican. Adlai Stevenson, Democrat. I'm going to say Paul Douglas went back to teaching at the University of Chicago. What made these people honest, and other states have all kinds of people that are honest. I know the lady's a senator from the Portage area. She's as honest as the day is long, the nicest person you ever wanted to meet. What sets them apart from the people who need a law to stop them from doing the wrong thing? And then when they go over the law, Carl says there's no enforcement. But what happened to the people who don't do it in the first place, Carol? I mean, why aren't we electing them to say, I'm not doing it because, A, not because there's a law there, or B, because I think I'm going to get caught. They're going to say, I'm not doing it because it's not right.
What happened to
that group?
They're called super PACs, and by the way, one of the biggest ones that creates this kind of a situation is APAC, but they're hardly the only. Take your issue, take your special interest group, whatever it is. When we started allowing the use of outside money, okay, so you got a house race, and all of a sudden, you know, you're in Florida, and all of a sudden you got $50 million that comes in from New York.
Yeah.
All right, that kind of thing is exactly how we ended up here.
Well, and you wouldn't argue with this. The constitutionalists, I mean, you got Scalia's dead, but he, of course, knew everything that there was in their mind back in those days. There's no way on earth that the people put together the Constitution in the world they lived in would ever understand that the people from Rhode Island could influence an election in South Carolina. It took you 15 days to get there, for God's sake. There's no way they could have thought that.
Right, there didn't used to be a way to do it. And now, not only can you do it, but the advent of the shrinking of the boundary of information, so it travels so much faster, right? Now it's the game.
Well, last thought, Carl, and then have a nice weekend. I also don't think When the Congress had 435 people in the House and 100 in the Senate, it was pretty tough when it took us forever to get there and back to Washington. You and I, if we're from Illinois or Tennessee wasn't probably even a state. Anyway, if it took us so long back and forth, and by the way, we probably only lived to 50, the chances of us corrupting all those other people were pretty, that's why they got so many people there. Well, now,
Chief, one of the simplest.
But corporations don't die, Carl. There's a problem.
I understand, but repeal the act that fixed the size of the House of Representatives of 435. There's no reason we can't have one for every 50,000 people in the United States, and get rid of the gerrymandering, because you would wildly expand this. I've advocated for this all the way back to when I used to live in Chicago.
2,000 people there.
Who cares? What's wrong with that? That's easy.
It's way too many people. We're paying way too many dinners. We need a new
No. I want to dilute the money train so much that you can't possibly spread it around far enough to do it.
I think somehow the idea that corporations never die is a bigger problem. I don't know what you do about that.
That's a tough one. There's ways to address that, but they have to go. I mean, you look at, just as a quick aside, if you look at the investment banking community when they were all partnerships, yeah, there were abuses, but they're nowhere near what they are today.
Oh, without a doubt. All right. And save these thoughts for next week. We got stuff. Yeah. Let's talk about I actually think this law on corruption, I think that's correct in what they did in Portage. Another Supreme Court thing I agree with. We'll talk about this on Tuesday.
Yeah, you bet.
S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 31. Down a little bit from our highs, but still we're up. Again, Nike's a big loser. They're down $15 at 16%. Ouch. Go out there and buy some Nike shoes, I guess. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.